This is the Poetry Foundation's Essential American Poets podcast. Essential American Poets is an online audio poetry collection. The poets included in the collection were selected in 2006 by Donald Hall when he was poet laureate. Donald Hall has said that the entryway to a poem is the beauty of its sound, and there's nothing like hearing the poet's voice. Recordings of the poets he selected reading their work are available online at poetryfoundation.org and poetryarchive.org. In this edition of the podcast, we'll hear poems by Kay Ryan. Kay Ryan was born in California in 1945 and grew up in small towns in the San Joaquin Valley and the Mojave Desert. Her mother was an elementary school teacher, and her father was an oil well driller and occasional prospector. In the summer of 2008, Ryan was named Poet Laureate of the United States. The honor, along with other recent awards, comes after decades of a much less heralded career. Ryan started writing poetry at age 19 while studying at UCLA and published her first book in 1983. She slowly began gaining recognition in the literary world in the mid-90s, and she reached wider acclaim in 2004 when she was awarded the Poetry Foundation's Ruth Lilly Prize. Ryan's poetry often draws comparisons to Emily Dickinson. Her poems are spare and precise, full of both mental dexterity and a sense of play. Describing Ryan, poet J.D. McClatchy has said, "There are poets who start with lived life, still damp with sorrow or uncertainty, and lead it towards ideas about life. And there are poets who begin with ideas and draw life in towards their speculations. Marianne Moore and Mae Swenson were this latter sort of artist. So is Kay Ryan." Ryan lives in Marin County and has taught remedial English for many years at the College of Marin. In an interview with the Christian Science Monitor, she said, "I have tried to live very quietly so I could be happy." Here's Kay Ryan reading some of her poems for the Poetry Foundation. She was recorded in San Francisco in 2007.
This poem is called Paired Things, and it really is just stopping for a minute to think about how strange the things that are connected, and not only in the outside world, but in ourselves, and how they can shift from one elevation to another. Paired Things. Who had only seen wings, could extrapolate the skinny sticks of things birds use for land, the backward way they bend, the silly way they stand. And who, only studying bird tracks in the sand, could think those little forks had decamped on the wind. So many paired things seem odd. Whoever would have dreamed the broad-winged raven of despair would quit the air and go bandy-legged upon the ground, a common crow. The poem I'm going to read is Blandger. Blandger's a made-up word. I couldn't find the proper word in English to suggest this condition of sensory relief, edging on sensory deprivation that I frequently yearn for. Blandger. If it please God, let less happen. Even out earth's rondure, flatten Eiger, blanden the Grand Canyon. Make valleys slightly higher, widen fissures to arable land. Remand your terrible glaciers and silence their calving, halving or doubling all geographical features toward the mean. Unlean against our hearts. Withdraw your grandeur from these parts. The reason that I find this poem really terrifying is that, for me, it's about when your mind comes apart and all you have is separate cars. And the things that are inside those cars can't keep you alive if your mind comes apart. 100 bolts of satin. All you have to lose is one connection. And the mind uncouples all the way back. It seems to have been a train. There seems to have been a track. The things that you unpack from the abandoned cars cannot sustain life. A crate of tractor axles, for example, a dozen clasp knives, 100 bolts of satin. Perhaps you specialized more than you imagined. This poem is called Turtle, and it comes from a period where I was feeling very frustrated and thwarted, and the kind of smashed up sound and imagery in here is a emblem of the way I was feeling. Turtle. Who would be a turtle who could help it? A barely mobile hard roll, a four-oared helmet. She can ill afford the chances she must take in rowing toward the grasses that she eats. Her track is graceless, like dragging a packing case places, and almost any slope defeats her modest hopes. Even being practical, she's often stuck up to the axle on her way to something edible. With everything optimal, she skirts the ditch which would convert her shell into a serving dish. She lives below luck level, never imagining some lottery will change her load of pottery to wings. Her only levity is patience, the sport of truly chastened things. This poem is called Flamingo Watching, and it was written at a time when I felt that the subtle needed defending in poetry. I felt that anything artful or subtle or sophisticated or elaborate or elaborated was suspect. It seemed like things had to be rather plain and blunt and straightforward and chunky to be taken seriously. Flamingo watching. Wherever the flamingo goes, she brings a city's worth of furbelows. She seems unnatural by nature, too vivid and peculiar a structure to be pretty, and flexible to the point of oddity. Perched on those legs, anything she does seems like an act. Descending on her egg or draping her head along her back, she's too exact and sinuous to convince an audience she's serious. The natural elect, they think, would be less pink, less able to relax their necks, less flamboyant in general. They privately expect that it's some poorly jointed, bland gray animal with mitts for hands whom God protects.
That was Kay Ryan reading her poetry in 2007. You've been listening to the Essential American Poets podcast, produced by the Poetry Foundation in collaboration with poetryarchive.org. To learn more about Kay Ryan and other Essential American Poets, and to hear more poetry, go to poetryfoundation.org.